It's the Hampton Roads BusinessJournal.com podcast interview. Bringing you interviews with Hampton Roads successful small business owners and entrepreneurs. And now, our host, Rod Watson.
Hello, Hampton Roads BusinessJournal.com listeners. Today I have the pleasure of bringing to you Jim Stallings from Monster Clean for our interview. Jim, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, Rob.
Jim, thanks a lot for joining us, and let's get right into finding out who you are. Please take a little time, take a minute to tell us a little about yourself. We want to get to know you, and then tell us a little about your business.
Well, Rod, I'm a Navy brat that joined the Navy after high school. Did 20 years in the United States Navy, and was actually disarmed bombs for a living. You'd see diver, jumped out of airplanes, things like that. A very interesting profession in the Navy, and decided to get out right after the war on terror began. The terrorists flew airplanes into the towers up in New York. Once I made the determination I was going to separate from the Navy, all the reasons that I got out killed off the ability to apply my skill sets in the civilian community. In other words, there aren't any bombs in my backyard. Uh-huh. And one of the reasons why I was getting out was because I needed to be home with my very young teenage daughters at the time. So I was looking for something that would keep me closer to the house but still produce an income. When I was getting out of the Navy, actually, I first cast an eye toward a Subway restaurant franchise. While that was attractive at first, it quickly became less attractive. Timing was wrong. Right about that time, Quiznos, Firehouse, Blimpies, you name it, everybody started showing up and competing with Subway, which had been the fastest growing franchise on the planet and one of the lowest cost for franchise fees. But, you know, all that new competition entering the market, and their market share started dropping, and I got cold feet. Started looking around for something different to do. And that's when chance reared his head. I hired a young man to come out and clean my carpets, and he did it differently. He did it better. He had a better mousetrap. His system intrigued me. I can tell you more about that if you'd like. Essentially, the thing that drew me to his system was there was a better mousetrap. And when I went back and looked at his ad, there really was nothing in his ad that said that he was going to bring a better mousetrap to the game, you know, to clean my carpets. So it was a better mousetrap that was poorly marketed. I went around and looked out in the local economy to see if anybody else was using this new novel equipment, and nobody was. So it was a better mousetrap that was also had very low market penetration. The entire equipment package cost was only about $5,000, so it had a very low startup cost. From an entrepreneurial standpoint, the better mousetrap that was poorly marketed had very low market penetration and cost almost nothing. So I had to leave. I really had no choice. All the stars aligned, and I had to jump on board. The only thing I needed to know was, can I stand doing it? That's how I ended up in the carpet cleaning world.
Oh, great. And I've been in meetings with you when you described your business, and I can tell you love it, too. You've got a passion that drives you to be the best at what you do, and it definitely comes out when you interact with other business owners.
Passion is one of the most important things about making a business successful.
Yeah, it sure is. It drives you and it gets you through the day. Okay, Jim, to get the interview started with a success quote, do you have a favorite quote or one that you could recommend to us? And if so, please explain why it's so meaningful to you.
Favorite quote. You know, if anything, it's probably my father. And, you know, it's not really a quote, more of a philosophy. He told me that, you know, in life you have to look at your life and the burdens you stack onto your life like a little red wagon. And it doesn't matter what you put in the little red wagon. You got to remember you have to pull it. So, you know, I try to make sure that my wagon is still pullable.
So you don't bite off more than you can chew, and make sure you have a plan for managing.
Basically, that's it. They just plan it in a different way.
Okay. All right. Now I'd like to talk about a business failure. What we do with business failures, what we're always trying to accomplish with our shows for HamptonRoadsBusinessJournal.com is let business owners understand that there are other people who have the same challenges or have challenges that we need to get over, and that not every decision we make is a home run. So
if you
have a business failure or a personal shortcoming or a major challenge that provided a significant learning experience for you and can be credited for helping you get where you are today.
Yeah, I'm not sure how politically correct it is. I wanted to get into government contracting. I looked at how to penetrate that market, and so I paid visits to those entities around me that might be more inclined to purchase my products, called the driest tender. You know, it's easier to light fire to a twig than a log, right? So I go out and find the folks that are most likely to buy. That would be, you know, for me, in the military industry, local, NAVFAC, which is Naval Facilities and Engineering Command, the 5th Fleet Industrial Supply Center. I talked to them, and essentially they told me that all janitorial service contracts were going 8A, which is a minority business-owned set-aside, and that I wouldn't, you know, that, and, well, anyway, the long story short, decided to find a way around that, because I don't like to take no for an answer, and so I went out and pursued something called a GSA schedule, which would have helped me out, because of the way federal contracting works. GSA schedule holders have contracting priority over the set-aside, all of them. It's second in line, only behind blind and severely handicapped. And so I got my GSA schedule. I went back to FISC and NAVFAC, and they said, we don't care. And I said, well, really, you don't care? I mean, this is the federal code. This is written down into the Code of Federal Regulations. It's the law. You have to care. They said, we don't care. And I went and talked to the OSDBU up in the Washington, Navy Yard in Washington. I invested a lot of time in trying to chase down these contracts because I saw that as the big fish. In the end, I surrendered my GSA schedule after a year of fighting for work. And the lesson learned was that it's not always a good idea to go after the big fish. Sometimes you can easier fill your nets with lots of little fish than a whale. The whale is harder to catch.
Yeah, especially when you're getting going and you may not have the connections to make that catch effective. So, yeah, sure. Okay, right. Let's go on to the next question, which is our aha moment. Do you have a business or entrepreneurial aha moment where the light bulb came on and shined real bright for you, let you realize that, hey, this is what I want to do, this is where I want to take my business, this is how I want to proceed? Do you have a moment where you had a realization?
That happened when I made the switch from pursuing the Subway franchise. Mm-hmm. To pursuing the carpet clean. It happened because I was growing disillusioned with the idea of starting up a Subway because of declining market share. And I saw a real opportunity with this other new system, something called the Rotovac power system. And that's how I started Monster Clean. I introduced something new to the market that did not exist. It was a better mousetrap. It just took off. It took off because it is better. I mean, better things perform better.
Sure. And what's great about it is that you had a plan or you had a goal in sight with the Subway, but you did your research and you realized that, and you followed your gut and said, hey, maybe this isn't a great idea. The trends aren't supporting success in this area. So you adjusted to something that has turned out to be very successful for you.
Yeah, absolutely. We can't you can't keep beating your head against the wall when if there's not a market for your product, or if the market for your product's in decline, it's probably a good idea to look for another product. Which is what I'm doing right now, by the way, as well. You know, I have a carpet cleaning company. The industry trend is that folks are going to hard floors, and there's fewer and fewer carpets around, and more hard floors. But people don't like hard floors, so they cover them up with area rugs.
Mm-hmm.
My answer is to open a rug cleaning shop, which is what I just did.
Adjusting to the wave of the future.
So I catch both sides of the market, those that still have carpets and those that have gone to rugs.
That's a great story of how you adjust. That's great. And we may, you may want to bring that up when we talk about your current projects and products, but if there's something else that you wanted to mention during that time, that's fine too. Okay, now I'm looking for an I made it moment. Do you have a moment in time that you'd like to discuss with us where you finally had a chance to take a deep breath and look at the situation around you and say, I've made it. I've achieved something. Do you have a moment like that?
No. I have not made it. And I don't think that, I think if I had a $2 million, $3 million a year company, I don't think I would ever feel like I made it. Somebody I had an employee the other day that told me that he'd made enough money for the week, and he really, didn't need to work, the next day. So he's going to let one of the other employees do it. And I told him, go wash his mouth out with soap. And he looked at me. I was joking. I said it in a jovial tone. I says, don't ever tell me that you've got enough money. Now, I know that that's probably not something that a lot of people won't think is politically correct to say, but, if you're satisfied, you stop working.
That's right.
And, so you just can never be satisfied with the status quo. Keep working. And remember, it's not just you. It's your kids, and it's not just now. Eventually, I'd like to stop working. I guess that's when I've made it, when I can stop working. And enjoy the fruits of my labors that have led up to the point where I could stop. Prior to that, there's never I made it. Just don't believe in it.
Yes, you're the first one on the show so far that has said that, but I've been really wanting somebody to say, hey, look, I'm hungry, I'm still working, I'm never satisfied, I'm just going to keep plugging away until my working days are done. That's definitely what I was looking for. So thanks for being the first to come up with that. I've actually laid it out there many times and said, okay, it's okay if you don't have an I made it moment, because to be honest with you, I'm never going to give myself that satisfaction until it's time to hang everything up and sell the business, and then I'll say it. Now, I appreciate accomplishments and reaching goals and acknowledge that I've reached them and rewarded myself and all that great stuff. But I will tell you, I probably won't give you an I made it moment either, because I'm not done yet. And I'll look back on it with pride, but I agree with you 100%. Okay.
Yep.
Jim, at Hampton Roads Business Journal, we're here to help small business owners on their journey to success and to let them know that they're not alone. Many of us are faced with similar challenges and are dealing with them every day or come up occasionally. Do you have a key turning point in your business career that you could point to that has directed you and you could say has really helped you along to get where you are?
Sure, I can tell you a couple small. I would say realizing that you're never, ever going to be completely ready for the next stage in your business. And you just have to suck it up and put on your big boy pants and just do it. There's risk in everything. I mean, you can try to mitigate risk, and you can do that different ways. When I went from portables to a van. That was a big step. When I went from a van to a truck, that was a big step. When I got my second truck, it was another big step. Now those things happen, and happen intelligently from a business perspective. You know, when it came time to purchase my second truck, I decided that I was not going to make the purchase until I was turning away twice as much money as I needed to make the payment on the truck. So that point for me, now the truck's nowhere near this expensive, but you have to look at profit margins, was $600 a day I needed to be turning away before that truck made sense. And so, you know, we just kept plugging away, and we got the $600 a day that we were turning away. And then I changed my mind. And I says, you know, before I go, you know, spending, you know, over $100,000 on a new truck, let's see if I can kill some of the demand and reduce my workload all at the same time. So I raised my rates.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I thought that, okay, well, I'll be more profitable and work less. Well, both happened. It, well, one happened. I was more profitable. I didn't work less. The demand went nowhere. There was still, at the new rate, the demand was not diminished at all. Uh-huh. So I needed a new truck because increasing the rate didn't kill demand. The only thing you can do is increase capacity, right? I mean, that's simple, supply and demand.
Mm-hmm.
So we increased capacity, and things, it's just, you know, that's the story. It's all history now. We have two truck operation working towards third. And now we're in a new, our journey, as you say, where, and while I said earlier that the rug plant was an answer to a changing market, it's also recognition of reality. I have been operating out of my home, and there comes a point in every business, or in most businesses, where you outgrow your home. The two of those big Monster Clean trucks parked out from my house. My neighbors weren't going to let me have three. So if we're going to grow, I needed a place to move to.
Mm-hmm.
So we secured a space, 2,500 square foot warehouse, you know, and you know, big enough to get my trucks inside. But if I'm going to, you know, I looked at it and said, well, if I'm going to have a space that I can park my trucks at and run my business from, that's a mighty darn expensive garage. That's a pretty darn expensive parking lot. And so it needs, I wasn't satisfied with the idea of just paying just to have an office, just to have a parking lot, a place to, you know, hide my trucks indoors when it got cold.
Uh-huh.
It needed to do something else. It needed to produce income. It needed to pay for itself. So how do we do that? Rug cleaning plant.
All right. There you go.
That's how
we do it. And I think the rug cleaning plant is going to be the answer to our next question. So I'm a marketing guy, so I like to extend an offer to our guests, to an opportunity to describe a business product or service that's coming up or that you're currently working on that has your blood pumping because you know it's going to be a great service or asset to business owners and to your customers. So I may be thinking too far ahead, but I'm thinking it's your carpet cleaning, rug cleaning plant, but I'll let you go ahead, and if you have anything else to add, feel free to give us your plug.
Sure. Yeah, Monster Clean is operating now a new rug cleaning plant. We've only had about 10 rugs in plant so far, so we're brand spankety new. We aim to compete with RIA Rugs, Mark Gunzenhauser, Scotch Rugs, Owl's Dry and Clean. There's a few other companies around here that clean rugs and implant. The difference between them and Monster Clean is in how it's done and the basic core methodology. We aim to reproduce the Orient. We built an artificial river inside our building, constructed drying racks. The artificial river basically, when a rug's cleaned in the Orient, they take it down to the riverbank, and they clean it there. Only thing, you know, it's dirty Ganges water, and here we're using clear water. It's something you have to see to believe or see to understand. Either way, that's another point where we're going to be the tippy end of the spear. I do like to set trends, to blaze trail. What we're going to do is trailblazing two different things. First of all, we're acquiring a new machine from Turkey. Won't be right away, probably in January or so. This machine is called Centrifuge. It's a think washing machine on spin cycle. Only it's 14 feet long, lays on its side, spins at 1,700 RPM. It's the drying machine for cleaning your carpets. All the bad things that happen to your carpet when it's being cleaned happen in the drying. The browning, the wicking, the running, all those things happen while it's drying. If you can shorten the dry cycle from, say, 24 hours to 4 hours, which is what this machine does, then you reduce the probability of bad things happening.
Okay.
Plus, just expert care, you know, from a master rug cleaner will help out quite a bit as well, which I am. Then the other new novel thing that I want to introduce is when your rug comes into the shop, we're going to collect a couple of pieces of data from our clients. That's cell phone and email address with their name and everything else. But the reason we want that is so that when it comes time for their rug to start the cleaning process, which is the vacuuming and what's something called dusting, where we heat the back of the rug with beater bars and drop the dry, heavy, sandy, gritty dirt down through the rug through a grate and then vacuum again and again and again and then, you know, basically do all the dry soil removal. When we get to that phase, we'll send you a text message and an email address and give you the option to log in via a webcam, and you'll be able to watch us do that for you.
Oh, wow.
And then we'll send you another text message when we're getting ready to clean the rug. And then we'll send you another text message when we're getting ready to, you know, do any spotting and things like that on the rug. And then we'll send you another text message when we're getting ready to do the fringe work. And then another one when we're getting ready to do the drying. Now, hopefully, we're sitting around, my clients are sitting around with their friends, and, you know, and bing, they get this email or a text message, and they say, oh, hey, there's my rug being cleaned. They can watch right there on their iPhone or their Android, and they show it around the table to their friends. Hey, look at that. Wow, what, isn't that neat? I think that somebody that has a $35,000 rug is going to trust it to the guy who will let them watch over the guy that won't.
Sure. It's a great idea.
Yep.
Okay. Hey,
it'll be the first in the country, by the way. Nobody's ever done it.
Yeah, that's a great idea. It's never heard of anybody doing that. So
that's because nobody
has. Nobody has. You're the first. You're the first one. The first one doing it. There you go. Okay. All right, Jim, it's time to put you in the hot seat. Hey, this part of our episode, I like to fire quick questions at you and get your thoughtful, thought-provoking, and valuable answers. So the first question is, best business book. Can you recommend a business book for our listeners, and if so, why do you find it important?
I thought Pyro Marketing. I mentioned it earlier. Pyro Marketing basically is about focused marketing instead of shotgun approach. It's finding the driest tinder and lighting fire to that instead of trying to light fire to a log.
Okay, and prior to starting your... There's two ways we can look at this next question. Either prior to starting your business or once you were in business, what was preventing you from taking the steps to the next level and moving on? So looking back on your journey, did you see anything that was holding you back, either getting started or taking it to the next level?
Sure. I think that most young business owners are afraid to let go, to surrender control. And it's liberating and vital to the growth of your business to hire employees and separate yourself from the day-to-day grunt work of the business. You need to run it, not do it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And you got to delegate. You got to surround yourself with good people that you can trust and give them the responsibility so that you can help them grow and improve in their service and their productivity. And
pay them enough to where they don't want to go anywhere else.
There you go. That's right. Okay, Jim, what's the best business advice that you've ever been given?
I would say, I don't know how it's exactly put to me, but I'm going to paraphrase in military speak.
Sure.
Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead.
That's right. That's all about action. It's taking action. And that's
right.
One of our...
I mean, it's paralyzed by fear. I've danced around the idea of this rug factory for 2 years, and it really isn't that expensive. And fear has held me back from doing what I should have done a year and a half ago. Finally, we realized that you're never going to be 100% ready.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to go at it when you're 80 or 90% ready.
Right, right. And then you tweak it as you go along.
Right. Just damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead.
That's
just
right.
Do it.
Okay.
And you'll find a way to make it work if you have an entrepreneurial spirit. Entrepreneurs are problem solvers. Often, though, they're also paralyzed by fear. So good advice for somebody with an entrepreneurial personality is just do it and figure out how to, say yes and then figure out how later.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I've received that advice many, many times, I can tell you that. Okay, now I'd like you to take a time to give our listeners one action that they can take in the next 24 hours that will move their business to the next level and get them one step closer to their goals.
Find something that they don't like to do and hire somebody else to do that, and then take the time that they had been devoting to that thing and put it into something productive that they enjoy doing. The more you enjoy your business, the better you are at it. And if you remove the things from your business that you're responsible for doing, then the business will run better. And I don't mean remove them by getting rid of them. You can't. Those things often are things that you can't avoid. You hire somebody to do those things.
Yeah,
so
and
things,
focus. I'm sorry.
Focus
on what
you're.
Why you got into the business in the first place? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And let people who are experts at taking care of those support items.
Right. I mean, I don't do my own payroll. I've even given up control of my calendar now. I don't even keep my own calendar. My office manager tells me where I'm supposed to be and when, which is fine. It's good. I mean, I actually enjoy that. I just tell her, this block of time, I don't want you to book up for me.
Right.
And, I'm more productive that way.
She's leveraging your time. That's right. Okay. Now, Jim, I know you like building websites and you have other interests, so I'm looking for a good answer here for you. But do you have an internet resource like an Evernote or Google Hangouts that you absolutely love and would like to share with our listeners?
No, sir. No, they're all tools in a big toolbox. I just discovered today Google Cloud Print and scared the tar out of Dawn, that's my wife, when I was in my office and printing to the printer that sits beside her in her office at home. as she called me saying, "What's going on?"
I think the machines are... Yeah, machines are taking over. They're running the house.
Yep. So, I think that's it's amazing what we can do now. And it's like setting up the the streaming webcam in my office. You know, I needed some special things. I needed a static IP, you know, from Cox. Cost just a little bit extra money. I needed to have enough upload speed for that to work clear, so that cost a little extra money. And, you know, I hired a programmer to do that. That cost a little extra money. And, like, you know who the programmer is, a security company. I hired one that, you know, if you think about it, you can put a streaming webcam in your house. They've seen them on TV where it watches the door, right? So you can see who came in the front door. What's the difference? I just put it in a business. So, I mean, I use their system, their software, their, you know, and just a repurpose it. Instead of security, it's looky-loo.
Yeah.
You know, it's have a peek over my shoulder while I'm working on your rug. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Okay, wrapping up with our big question, you wake up in a parallel universe, but as you wake up, you realize that everything is gone. Your food and lodging's taken care of, so you don't have to worry about that. But you also have your current knowledge. You've got $500 cash and a laptop computer. How are you going to spend your first 7 days to get you back to where you are right now?
I started exactly the way I started it before. You go out and you get the best tools that you can afford, even if you got to borrow money. And my whole startup kit was $5,000. Put $500 in, that's 10%. Most banks give you that, especially if you can, you know, if you have that knowledge. You said I have the knowledge I have now. I can convince the bank that I'm worth that because I talk good game. I put that to work and start producing money. And the thing I would do different, I'd fill up my calendar for a day and then hire somebody to do that day. And then I'd get busy marketing the second day and hire somebody, and then I'd move that guy, hire him to do the second day. And I'd clean carpets for 24 hours, for 1 day's worth. And then I'd never clean another carpet because I'd hire somebody else to do it. Enough work to keep one person busy for a day. I can hire part-time work for that. And from the beginning, I would not clean carpets. And I think that a business owner with experience would know that that the thing to do is start your business from the very beginning, not needing you in the day-to-day operation of it.
Hey, Jim, thanks a lot for being with us today. And I'd just like to give you an opportunity to give our listeners some parting advice. And please let us know what's the best way for our listeners to contact you.
Parting advice, I almost everybody that knows me knows I'm a very outgoing personality and also very opinionated. But I think the cardinal rule of small business, besides being don't be timid in the operation of your business, is don't be forgettable. So stick out in the crowd. In a good way, though. I mean, don't be the obnoxious guy, but, you know, don't be afraid to be silly. You know what I mean, Rod? You've heard me sing at networking events. So the idea of not being afraid to be remembered, you know, is important, especially if you're in a crowd of, you know, 30 other business owners. How are you going to stick out and be remembered if you're not making yourself memorable? And then being bold in your decision making with your business, and separate yourself from your business as soon as you can. It should be the goal, I think, the end goal of every business owner to completely separate themselves from their business. And why? Because your business is more valuable if you're not running it. And what I mean by that is that, you know, if you look at a venture capitalist and whether or not he's going to buy your business out from underneath you, right? They're never going to do that for a business that they have to get in and put their hands in and operate, because they don't want to do that. They just want to put their money in and produce and have it just feed money back to them. So they buy businesses that they can buy that already running like clockwork. It's got a business, you know, it's got an office manager, it's got a foreman, it's got flow charts and procedures. I've got flow charts that for what happens when my guys arrive in the morning, you know, what happens to the truck. They got what, you know, checkout procedures, and what happens when they arrive at somebody's home. What does P1 do? That's person one. What does P2 do? That's the passenger, person two. That, you know, P1's the foreman, P2's the assistant. And so it's systemized. And systemized breeds consistency. And consistency breeds quality. You know, predictable quality. That and so you know what the product is. And because you know what the product is and can vocalize it, it's worth more. And because you don't have to be there to make, you know, for the business to run, it's worth more. It'll sell better.
I'm going to say, you get those systems in place, you get a routine, you get a rhythm going, and like I said, that's quality there. Now you're efficient, you're making more money, you're helping more people, but you've got quality control in there as it goes, too, because your people know what to do, and you know how to do it very well. You're saving yourself time and your customers time, and everybody wins.
And right, you need to have feedback loops. I mean, well, we have those built in nowadays with, you know, Google reviews and Yelp and, you know, Facebook comments and likes, and I mean, there's so many different businesses today have such an advantage over the businesses of yesteryear in what the feedback loops are like. I mean, you had to send cards out inviting folks to, you know, review you and send them back in the post before, you know, or catch them at the time that was done, in which case they lie because they don't want to offend you. You know, where today is much more anonymous and honest. And all pervasive, and you can't get rid of it. I mean, a bad review sticks with you forever, so you better not get them.
Do a good job in the first place. You won't have to worry about my reputation management and restoration skills.
Right. I mean, yeah. That's so right. Our what, do you do that? Our if you do good quality work and invite your clients to I call it evangelize. I call them the monster clean evangelists, my clients, each and every one of them. I even tell my employees that we're not in the business of cleaning carpets or rugs or upholstery or tile grout or anything like that. That's not what we do for a living. And my new employees go, well, Jim, what do we do for a living if we don't do that? We're manufacturers. We manufacture new monster clean evangelists. Awesome. That's new cheerleaders for monster clean. And I tell my clients that too. I tell them, look, we're in the business of manufacturing new monster clean evangelists. And so, you know, and I explain what that is. And then I tell them, but you know, if you haven't been to church, you know that before you can evangelize, you have to do what? Bear witness. So bring us out, try us out, bear witness, and then get out there and evangelize.
That's awesome. All right. Hey, Jim, that's a great point, and let our listeners know how we can contact you.
Oh, I'm at monsterclean.com, www.monsterclean.com, and we're at My Monster Clean at Facebook, and my phone number is 757-354-1252. I can be reached via email, jim@monsterclean.com. Actually, if you go to my website, monsterclean.com, I've got every which way but loose to reach me. If you go to my contact page, you can even scan a QR code, and it'll load me right into your phone book without you having to type it in. Makes it super easy.
Outstanding. And then get those floors and carpets cleaned. Outstanding. And rugs now, too. Well, great. Thank you very much, Jim Stallings from Monster Clean, for being on our show today. Hampton Roads Business Journal listeners, thanks for being with us, and we'll talk to you later.
Thank you very much, Rod.
Hey, thank you, Jim. That was great.
Thank you for joining us for today's HamptonRoadsBusinessJournal.com interview.